On this week's episode, we get to third base with American Pie. Will you ever have sex if you don't have it in high school? Is Eugene Levy the original DILF? And how much did apple pie prices skyrocket after this movie? Find out now. You're listening to 24 Flames Per Second. Everybody, welcome to another episode of 24 Flames Per Second, the podcast that roasts the films we love the most. As always, I'm your host, Robert Bohorquez, and welcome back. This is actually, we're at the end of April, but it's the beginning of many episodes coming up that are food related. And we're starting with Home Base, American Pie, the home base of food movies. I guess the home run of food movies. I don't know what you want to call it. This is inappropriate. But yeah, everybody, welcome to the show. We're talking American Pie today. We got a whole bunch coming up later throughout April or throughout May and into June that we'll talk about at the closer to the end of the show. But we're super excited to we're in the home stretch of season 4, and we've got some really exciting stuff coming up in season 5. We're changing some things up, should be fun. And so yeah, everybody, stay tuned for that. And let's see, for those of you that are part of our Patreon, let's see. We just did the Oscars drink along, so in like a week and a half, because we're at the end of April, there's another drink along coming, y'all. And so, yeah, if you want to get on that fun, go to patreon.com/24flamespod and check it out. You can help support the show. There's a lot of good stuff up there now. And we got a couple new folks that joined us in the last like month too. So, very excited to be growing that little community over there. But yeah, everybody, I think. All that being said, let's jump into everybody that we got lined up here. We got a head-to-head, a real Jim versus Pie, you would say. But we'll start with the co-host. That's all we're going to talk about from this movie is how that boy fucked that pie. But we'll start with the co-host this week, across the city from me, the Oz to my Finch, Kwesi Phillips.
What's up, man?
Ah, such a soft but strong voice.
Oh, is it coming? Not coming through?
No, that's because like Oz in the movie.
Oh,
he's the big lacrosse.
I see.
Jazz boy.
I was trying to figure out. I didn't realize you're making the sexual metaphor. I thought you were talking about baseball, and I was like, what does that have to do with? Oh no. Home run. I see.
Home run.
That pie.
I guess even though technically the pie was supposed to be third base, but whatever. He gets all the way with it. We're like, Casey's just giving me side eye every time we mention it. She's like, fuck this.
Yeah. Yeah. This is going to be great. No, I can tell. Yeah, we're on a kick of food episodes. This is the problem of letting Robert schedule when he's hungry. We usually have a problem just like, you get very inspired with food when we do these.
That's my secret, Kwesi. I'm always hungry.
Always hungry.
Well, very good. It's great to have you here, buddy. Yeah. Let's start with, did you watch the movie this week?
Would you believe I've never seen this movie?
Really?
Yes. I know.
And not even to prep for this?
I know every reference because of the fact that it is arguably one of like the most referenced movies in like growing up. Just everyone. So I know all the beats. I know the pie. I know Stifler's mom. You know,
yeah.
I know one time at band camp. I just know these beats just from everyone talking about it. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. And I just never got around to it.
Right, right.
As horny as I was as a teenager, never, never happened. But yeah. I, you know, and like looking up stuff like for the podcast, like I'm excited to hear, you know, looking 20 years plus back on this movie, what our panelists kind of think about it. Because, you know, it's definitely in a different light nowadays, you know, with the stars of the movie, you know, moving on to so many different things like Eugene Levy and Schitt's Creek. And I found out he almost didn't even do it. Like there were about
this
two
movie?
Weeks. There were 2 weeks from, you know, principal photography and or like just like starting things. And like he was finally on board, really, with Jason Biggs because he did like some improv with him, and he's like, okay, this is gonna be good. Because just reading the script, I'm sure he was like, no,
he's what? Like, this is disgusting.
But it does, for me, have one of the best working titles for a pitch of any movie that I've seen before. So here, the original from screenwriter Adam Hertz, first script title, unfinished teenage sex comedy, which can be made for under $10 million that studio readers will most likely hate, but I think you will love.
That was the title. This full clause
of the script dropped on the screen. And guess what happened? I seriously applaud that. That's awesome.
Just picturing some studio producer, ma'am. We're talking about movies. Like, you don't know what that is. Reading that and being like, well, I have to read this one.
That's honestly, go for it, man. Like, why not? And it takes a lot of courage to just do that. You know, dropping it on a you've never written a screenplay before, and that's just like, boom, let's go.
Wow, that's wild.
It is wild. So I'm looking forward to, you know, hearing it from our panelists' perspective of actually, you know, knowing this film and watching it.
Yeah.
And stuff. And maybe it will be time to give it a watch. Who knows?
Well, let's get into it. Let's get to the head to head. And so, yeah, we'll start with the roaster this week. One of the producers of Seattle's The Moth and a storyteller. You can find her on Twitter at Casey Rom. Casey Rom.
Hello.
Hello. How is it going?
Good. I was giving you side eye because you called our head to head Jim versus Pie, and
yeah,
I don't want to be either of those things.
Yeah, I was
fair,
just like,
very
can't.
Fair. Sorry, you know what? Don't like this analogy.
Neither of these things is good. Let's...
No. Hard pass. I would like to be the Natasha Lyonne in this scenario.
There you go.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't? Well, it's great to have you here. And on the defense this week, filmmaker and political activist, you can find him on social media at True Cody Olson. Cody Olson.
Hello.
Hello. How's it going?
It's going good. Going good. As I was saying, I just finished this film moments ago, refreshing my memory of it. And yeah, it's kind of interesting because it's a big franchise, it kind of spawned a big franchise. So it's interesting to like go back to the first one.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the origins of the American Pie extended universe. The pie that started it all.
Yeah, bro, have you even read the EU books, man? Like,
American Pie Legends? You don't know American Pie Legends?
Man, when Jim fought the Yuuzhan Vong, I was crazy.
They're making a spin-off What If series. They look back on like what would happen if, you know.
Oh, man.
Like, what? Have a hot mom.
Sure, well, the Terminator did actually have sex, you know, like
the Terminator. Oh my god,
guys, like, you don't even know the canon of this franchise is deep, you know what I mean? But yeah, I'm excited to talk about this film.
Yeah, well, we'll start the same way we always do with Movie in a Minute. And so, yeah, Cody, give us the full plot synopsis of American Pie, spoilers and all, and we'll give you 60 seconds and a three count. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, well, here we go. In 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, so Jim, Oz, Kevin, and Paul are, along with Stifler on the fringes, I won't talk about Stifler for a moment. They are friends who have not had sex, and they're feeling anxious about that coming into what I believe is the end of their senior year. Stifler is also someone who probably has had sex, so that's not 100%. He's kind of on the fringes of their friend group. They go to his parties a lot. He busts their balls, but they also kind of like him. So they're determined to have sex, and it follows each of their journeys and their different sort of misadventures, mostly failures with that, until we get to prom night. And kind of in some way or another, most of them do end up having sex, but I think part of their emotional journey is to let go of it a little bit, is to like... when they kind of stop, you know, like watching the water before it boils, it kind of happens organically for some of them. And I think it ends on this sort of interesting note. So.
Oh, and that's just right. A second under the buzzer, I think. And we'll give it to you. good. Yeah. They all do pretty much hook up at after prom. And so that's pretty much it. I mean, we skipped over a lot of specifics and who hooks up with whomst, but you know, that's fine. Maybe we'll get into it in the show itself. But yeah, everybody, I mean, that is American Pie, virginity pact, and the fruition of said pact. And so, yeah, everybody, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Cody will get your opening statements why you're here defending American Pie. Everybody, we'll be right back. And we are back, everybody. Welcome back to American Pie, the episode of 24 Flavors. just before the break, Cody made it back from band camp. He completed movie in a minute, and told us a great story. So yeah, let's get your opening statements. Why are you here defending American Pie?
Yeah, I think it's a funny film that has had a huge cultural impact. As Kwesi was saying, he knows a lot of the references through osmosis, even though he hasn't seen the film. And so I think culturally, it's just an interesting time capsule film from 1999, but also just textually, just looking at the film itself, I think it's broadly a pretty funny film that, even though the direction is relatively simple, it's pretty effective direction that kind of knows how to, I think, create, like, I don't know, funny scenarios. I'm trying to think of a more articulate way to say it. But yeah, I think it's a film that, for the most part, fires on the cylinders it's trying to fire on, is funny when it wants to be funny, and I think is surprisingly heartfelt at times, for me at least, going back and watching it.
Okay. I mean, Casey, why don't we just start with the plot itself? You know, there's a lot that happens. we skipped over it, but you know, a lot of specifics, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think actually that Kwesi and Cody both really set up my point for me pretty well here, because the fact that you can tell this plot in movie in a minute, something that is often failed because it's hard to tell a film's plot in a minute, is to me not a good thing. It means that there's not a whole lot going on here. And I think that the fact that Kwesi knows all the quotes and the moments and the beats without ever having seen the movie just means that you don't really need to watch this movie. Like, I didn't gain anything new from watching this for the first time since high school, because those funny parts still stick in my mind and I can, like, reflect on them and have a chuckle. And everything in the middle of those funny parts just was so, it was, like, hard for me to watch. I wasn't enjoying myself, and the 90-minute runtime just felt like an eternity to me when I was trying to watch this movie, because I just wanted to get to the next joke that I remember.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I disagree on only that the film's only merit is, you know, sort of the jokes taken in a vacuum, because I do think, like I mentioned, the emotional core of it is surprisingly strong in terms of kind of looking at these guys and also looking at the girls that, you know, you kind of get both sides of the, I think, Kevin and Tara Reid, their relationship. And so I guess I just think it's kind of interesting the way that it looks at what are their different stresses. I think the film does a good job of both laughing with the characters and laughing at them. You know, I think it kind of is able to have its cake and eat it too, and be like, they are crude and dumbasses, but they also, underneath the sex thing, is maybe something a little deeper emotionally about wanting to feel like you belong and things like that. So I don't know. I think it does have more to offer.
I can see these kind of little moments. Like, I think that you get from, I can't remember any of their names, the one with the girlfriend that is Tara Reid, you get from him,
Kevin.
Kevin, thank you.
And she is Vicky.
Yeah. Okay. you get from him that he, you know, he wants to, like, give her an orgasm, and I think that's a nice journey that he goes on, but it's really short-lived, and it's also, like, way too late. theoretically been dating for what I would assume is about a year. Like, it seems weird to everyone that they haven't had sex already. Like, I'm going to assume they've been together for a while, and she's gone down on him so many times at this point based on the very little background
Countless
information we get
daily
about their... Yeah, and it's like what you just now realize that you can return the favor because you want to get her in the sack. Like, it's so that just, like, too little too late from him. The only other one I would say has any kind of growth journey is Oz. And even with him, it's like, I guess he didn't tell his friends that they had sex. Like, that's kind of sweet. Like, he was like, oh, that's not what it's about. But he joins the jazz band just to, like, find a girl. And it's, again, it's like, they're already seniors, and theoretically, like, towards the middle or end of the year, they're, like, planning prom already. So it seems like all of this happened way too late in their development. Like, they should have known all of this already.
So for Oz, you could say that he joined the a cappella group only as this ruse, but I would argue that I think it's he changed his mindset from, oh, guys are here in our corner and girls are there in their corner, and we're kind of on different teams, and I have to sort of, for lack of a better term, I have to kind of convince or trick somebody into having sex with me. I feel like him doing the a cappella group, it was pretty clear from the get-go that he was kind of digging it. He's like a pretty decent singer. And I think it was him going, wait, maybe the secret is, like, enjoy myself and intermingle with the sexes and kind of go, I'm going to have this experience. It's not just like me and my friends in a corner being like, can we get laid and, you know, and having an aneurysm. So I disagree on that. I don't think he did that just to trick her. I think perhaps that was the narrative in his head, but I think he could have joined any group. He chose that group, and I don't think it's a coincidence that he was a good singer. He's not there, like, flat, you know? It's like, oh, he actually, maybe he's been cultivating this for a minute. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't think most high schools would let you join, like, with only a couple months left in the school year when you're actively playing lacrosse that has conflicts, but whatever. Moving on from that, I think that who we didn't touch on, who is theoretically the main character, I don't know, there's not really a main character, but we definitely spend the most time with Jim, and we get, like, his family.
We meet his family, yeah.
Yeah. What he does to Nadia is absolutely despicable. Like, there is no excuse for putting a woman on camera when she doesn't know she's on camera. That is so bad. And it only gets worse because of what happens after the fact. And then at the end of the movie, we're supposed to think that maybe they, like, made up from afar because he does an underwear dance for her. I'm like, this is not the same. Are you streaming this to everyone in your school? Because then maybe we could argue that you've made amends. But he never does anything in the movie to grow from that. And the only reason he ends up getting laid is because he finds a girl who's hornier than him. That's literally the only reason. He doesn't learn anything. I don't get anything from him, and I don't like him. And I don't like him at the end.
I think that's a fair critique, particularly about that scene. Like, that's an indefensible act, and I'm not going
to
argue.
It's hard to come back from revenge porn. I'm sorry. we're going to put a win in Casey's basket.
Not even revenge.
She didn't
even
do anything wrong. She just yeah. came over.
Yeah. Also, yeah, you're right. Not even revenge.
Yeah, right. It's
she was European. Yeah. I'm just kidding.
So 100% there. And I feel you on Jim that I feel like the journeys of Oz and Finch are more engaging for me. But I guess I think that's part of what I liked about the film is that it is this ensemble piece. And so if one person isn't resonating with you, there are other people who might resonate more. But I guess I'll say
you have four other white men to choose from. Congrats.
Welcome to 1999.
We get a young John Cho in this movie, and he speaks exactly one line. Thankfully, he gave us MILF, so
he, like, makes us, he makes it count.
He yeah. makes it count, but, like, he yells literally MILF. He's, like, the only non-white character in this entire movie.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, but it does go back to the cultural impact of this film is that I don't think MILF was in the cultural lexicon before that. And so it is kind of astounding that that this film just like, that's now ubiquitous.
Mm-hmm.
It did. It the only place it really existed was this group in I think the Philippines were using it as like a it was the Moro Islamic Liberation Front. They were using that, and I think they still are probably. But yeah, it was only this. And there is an article from the Atlantic I found from research called "Was American Pie More Influential Than Titanic?" So yes. You know, I don't know.
I'm just diverted to that for a second. Did they have a final verdict on it? Which one was more influential?
It's one of those "You Be the Judge" articles.
Oh yeah.
I wanted a scorecard. That's fine.
I will throw in one roasting point on that, though, is that I literally on Letterboxd gave a half a star each to MILF and Eugene Levy. And we have Eugene Levy in this whole movie, and no one calls him a DILF, and I think that is absolutely offensive. Like, it's right there. And it's no female character has caught on to his hotness. Like, I don't buy it.
But I think on that roasting point is a great topic to talk about is Eugene Levy. He's the cultural impact again is that we probably would not have Gene Levy as we know him now if he didn't come up in the American Pie films, right? But just also the way the films use him and the way he uses the film, it's great because it feels like it's, I don't know exactly what was written and what was improv, but it feels like there was some pretty solid improv there between him and the character of Jim, but it never feels like shaggy. It always still feels like the editing is pretty tight and it doesn't let the momentum die. It just lets them have these, I think, funny moments. There's one specific quote that I wrote down when Eugene Levy is talking to Jim a few scenes after the apple pie incident. And he's really trying to meet Jim where he is. You know what I mean? He's like, yeah. You know, and Jim is just mortified by it, and he like kind of looks off for a minute, and he goes, "Yeah, I guess I never did it with baked goods." And it's just such a brilliant moment. I love it.
Yeah, I think you could definitely argue that there are funny moments in this movie. I think where it lost me is that it doesn't capitalize on its best parts. Like Eugene Levy is iconic in this movie, but he's just not around enough. Like, how hard would it have been for him to interact with any one of Jim's friends? And like, I think Jennifer Coolidge is great in this movie, and she's barely in it at the very end, and she's like such a crucial part of it. And then again, Natasha Lyonne, totally underutilized. Like, mm-hmm. Why don't we get any of her personal motivations, or like, who's she trying to have sex with? I want to follow her. I would follow Michelle. Maybe it's just like too dude focused for me, but it's like girls in high school want to have sex also. And the only one we really get that from is Vicky.
This is something I was actually curious about with you guys. Cause you know, we all remember our, you know, confusing sexual awakenings as kids. And like that this movie is kind of like the, one of the big openings of like teen raunchy drama or comedies. Do you think that there's still like a place for that now? Like, do you think that American Pie kind of set the tone, or it's kind of like we can't make a movie like that anymore? Because yeah, like, I mean, you know, that type of comedy is genderless and also ubiquitous to human beings who are growing up. So, you know, like, do you think that you see more of those type of movies now? Like, and is there room for that?
I think that there could be, and I think maybe that's part of why this one just aged like milk for me, because I've seen better ones. I mean, I would put Superbad above this movie in terms of overall quality, but also, I don't know if any of you've seen The To-Do List with Aubrey Plaza, but it's so good, and it is fully a teen sex movie. That is all it is, but it stars Aubrey Plaza. It takes place in the 90s. It's wonderful. And I think that after seeing that, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, there is a good version of this movie. It's just, this one doesn't do it for me.
But my question is, did those movies happen without American Pie? To kind of go back to the cultural impact for a moment.
I mean, American Pie wasn't the first teen sex comedy. Like, there's been, you know, Porky's and all of these, like, movies that came before it. So, yeah, I do think they would still exist. I literally think MILF is the only thing that we can say. Only American Pie gave us that.
Yeah, I mean, there's Booksmart, too, is when I was thinking, Kwesi, which it's not quite the same film, but I think there's some similarities in, like, towards the end of high school, people wanting to break out of their shells a little bit and, you know, are feeling anxious.
Or this idea of, like, I don't want to go to college a virgin. I don't want to go to college never having been to a party. I don't want to go to college everyone thinking I'm a dork. Like, I think they're all in the same, you know, shared spiritual genre, whatever that may be. And yeah, I just think that American Pie, because it's so quotable, has like put itself in this high place of honor. But when you rewatch it as an adult, it to me, I just felt like icky. Like, I think you can talk about, you know, the burgeoning sexuality of teenagers, and it can be raunchy without being gross. And this movie to me is just gross. There's too much icky behavior. As much as I love Jennifer Coolidge, like, grown women should not be having sex with high school boys and, like, their son's friends. Like, that's really gross. The whole webcam incident is super gross. The beer, while hilarious, gross.
That's pretty funny.
It's really funny.
Cody.
The beer, I was keeping an eye on that. There is, the prop department clearly put some like white substance in the beer. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like some films would just be like, ah, he's going to drink the beer and he's going to puke. What, are you going to look at the beer? But I feel like they crossed their T's, they dotted their I's.
They saw there's something like, about Mary and they're like, you know what? We need to be up the bar.
But I would argue that's like one of the better jokes in the film, and it happens so early, and then it never comes back up to that level for me. Like, watching people continue to hold it and knowing that someone is going to drink it but not knowing when or how is like the most tension that I felt in that entire movie.
Alfred Hitchcock.
Sexual or otherwise.
Alfred Hitchcock would have been happy with that part. He was like, really? They've introduced the danger, and now, you know, when it explodes.
Chekhov's jizz.
Chekhov's.
Man, I had a moment, though, where I think I'd seen the film before, but I didn't remember certain details. I was almost hoping that Stifler was going to, like, drink it, gag for a split second, but then bring it back together and be like, eh, whatever. You know what I mean? He was, like, so focused that he was going to do that, but no, he was out of commission for a while.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see what else. I mean, we're kind of in character decision land, and who have we not? We haven't touched on Finch really, or we've talked a little bit about Oz. I guess maybe Finch is just who we haven't talked about at all.
I mean, there's not a lot to say about Finch. He doesn't have a ton of actual impact on screen. Like, there's this whole plot line of these rumors are being spread about him being this kind of badass, but we barely get to see him do anything except for poop and
putt.
Have sex with an adult.
He poops. He putts.
That's pretty much it. And I would have liked to see more of him. I think he was easily the most interesting of the core four characters. But in a similar way that Natasha Lyonne, who's kind of his counterpart, is swept under the rug, I feel like he is too.
I would, for me though, I would not say swept under the rug. I would just say that even the fringes of the film are populated with interesting characters. And I sometimes feel like the desire wanting to know more of their story is maybe a sign of the film succeeding. You know, it's going like, this is maybe we saw the correct amount.
Well, I don't think we needed any of Sherman, and so
the Shermanator. I can't do his quote justice because I don't quite have it locked and loaded right now. But man, that was just the way he delivers that was absolutely hilarious. I also really liked Finch, that Finch is not able to poop at the school, which is like, it's so specific. It's really hard to not both laugh at that, but also empathize with him. That he's like, oh, 16-minute round trip. I got to use the bathroom, BRB. I don't know. I love the specificity of that.
You would think someone that specific, though, would, like, eat some Activia or, like, take a fiber supplement. Like, just make yourself so regular you're on a poop schedule and you never have to worry about it. If it's that big of a deal to you.
Well, right. I think he was on a pretty regular schedule, but he, you know, he got slipped some X-lax, which really is going to, you know, mess you up a bit.
There's no fiber supplement.
Yeah, I found it. I find it really hard to believe that you would take the time to rip individual squares of toilet paper to make a toilet seat cover if you were about to poop yourself in a girl's bathroom. Like, I just, there's so many little moments that happen for the sake of, like, oh no, we're in a pickle, and it, none of them make actual sense to me. Like, I'm going to go back to Nadia because this whole scene just makes me so angry from start to finish. But, like, there is no way that you would change out of your ballet clothes in a stranger's home that is a male whose parents are home and then get distracted by a porno magazine and start touching yourself there. That's never going to happen. I don't care if you're European, which is also a bad stereotype. Like, you would not do that. You absolutely would not do that. And the fact that she's being filmed is just another layer of shittiness on all of that. But that wouldn't happen. Like, that wouldn't happen. There wouldn't be a character who is, you know, a real high school student who is really good at lacrosse, who's tall and attractive, who is so bad with girls like Oz is. Like, it just, how did they get this far, like, being this stupid?
So, you know, again, totally fair criticism of the Nadia scene. But I don't think that's a fair criticism of Oz, because I feel like that narrative is like, oh, he's good looking and successful. Why can't he talk to girls? I think that's kind of a common misconception sometimes, right? That, like, being nervous is not, there's not a direct correlation between nervousness and sort of how ineffective you are in your life, right? It's really more, some people are just nervous, right? And I do like that this guy who is successful in all these ways, who's portrayed by a good-looking actor, and they don't ever really, they don't even say he's not good-looking. Like, they kind of own that he looks like this and is sort of well-known in the school. He still has problems with talking to girls. And I feel like that makes the film more genuine and nuanced than if they had cast that same actor, but everyone was saying, like, oh, you're a dweeb the whole time, standing at 6 feet and broad-shouldered. I like that it's like, no, the two are not mutually exclusive, you know?
I guess that's just another opportunity, though, for this movie and franchise to do better with its female characters. Like, they really only allow Michelle to be equally horny. And it's like, I'm sorry, that tall, attractive athlete would have some girl throwing themselves at him, even if he's awkward. Like, in a real high school situation, there would be girls that wanted to hook up with him. There would be, like, there, it just doesn't, like, it makes Michelle like this unicorn, when in reality, like, all of these girls are at prom trying to get laid also.
But maybe he's not picking up on signs. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think, I hear what you're saying, and the film absolutely could be stronger with giving the female perspective, even though I think we get a little bit of that from Tara Reid and her friend. But I don't think saying that, oh, he would have women, you know, throwing themselves at him. I don't think that reads as true. I feel like anyone, anywhere, can not be comfortable in their own skin and have to learn that lesson. It doesn't, no matter how good looking or athletic you are.
Yeah, I guess. I think maybe I just don't get enough of him in general. Like, his whole journey, I could see what they were trying to do. They're like, oh, it wasn't about sex. He's falling in love with her. But I don't know if it was like the acting or the dialogue or what, but it just didn't ring true for me in that sense. Like, I thought that it was more like, oh, he likes someone and he's less awkward finally. Like, I don't know. His character is a big question mark to me. I think that he had the least personality of any of them that I could latch on to. And I just don't really like any of these people. And he was the one that was maybe the closest to someone I could like. And then it just doesn't land. Maybe if we spent more time with him or understood him a little more. But again, because it's this ensemble of like six shitty white men, if you count Sherman and Stifler, like it just doesn't work for me. I think that I don't know. I probably am not going to watch the rest of this franchise because I really didn't enjoy watching this. But I'm like, do they get more to do later? Like, you have these really great actresses. Like, do they get more in later movies?
Unless you wander into a drugstore into the DVD section, you're probably not going to be able to because these movies are not streaming anywhere.
No.
Well, we've about reached time to unmask, so we might as well do that. And so, yeah, everybody, let's talk about how we really feel. We'll start with you, Cody.
Yeah, I enjoy this movie. To be honest, I probably had said I can do either side when we were signing up for this episode, and I didn't remember it honestly too well. I have a better memory of some of the later films in this series because I kind of like the like growing older element of those. So this one was, I was kind of watching it going, I hope I like it. But I actually did. It was funnier than I remembered, and it was more heartfelt than I remembered. So I'm pretty here for it. Yeah, I mean, I think that said, the Nadia scene is pretty rough. You know, watching that, that's an indefensible thing. But I think broadly the film works as a comedy and as a coming-of-age story.
Nice. Casey, now that Sula is settled.
Yeah, goodness. She literally stepped right on my microphone too. So I was like, I don't know if they can hear that crackle. Yeah, I everything I said was pretty much true. I didn't really enjoy it. I think that I could have just kept my memories of the moments that I thought were funny, and that would have been enough for me.
Yeah. Let's see. And Kwesi, are you gonna go watch it? Do you think?
Probably not. I think that this genre does have some gems in it, and I think that the legacy of American Pie is kind of undeniable. Whether or not you like it, like liking it or not, is definitely like debatable. I think that for me, it's such a staple in like the zeitgeist of comedy, I think, and like we will all know those references probably forever. But I think that I'm ready for those more complex type of teen like storyline. Like I love Booksmart and like movies like that. And like the show Sex Education, like things like that are a little bit more like interesting, complex. I'm here for and excited about. So I think that I probably won't see American Pie unless I don't know, we're gonna drink along or something. I don't know. But not on my Netflix queue for sure.
We've done a handful of these kind of like naughty oddies, just kind of raunchy teen comedy sex movies, and this one is probably the one that I know the best and is the most nostalgic for me actually. But yeah, I found myself laughing at some stuff, but I think there is some like, I don't know, I think it, I agree with you, Casey, that like the one-sidedness of dudes gotta get laid is like not, doesn't make for that interesting of a movie anymore. Like obviously the whole Nadia thing, I did not remember that she gets like sent home. Mm-hmm. Like Jim gets her effectively deported. Like mm-hmm. That's fucked up. Yeah, I completely forgot that was, like, the consequence of that scene. And, like, that alone, I mean, even, ugh. Also, Casey Affleck is in this, which we didn't even mention until now. But the thing I do like about it is that it gives everybody something to do. Everybody has some kind of little arc in it. And that was kind of like the nice thing that I took away from it, or everybody has something to do. We don't have characters that just other than I guess, Jessica, who is, Natasha Lyonne. She doesn't do much other than advise Vicky mm-hmm. and Kevin and Finch ultimately too. But yeah, the rest of the series, at least the first three, I'm going to call the actual series. There's a lot of like spinoffs, like The Naked Mile and all these other ones that, are really don't, I think Eugene Levy is the only one that's like consistent through them. But I remember the second one being better. The third one is Jim and Michelle's wedding is the plot of that one, which it's maybe the raunchiest. But the second one maybe would probably be better than the first one now on rewatch. I don't know. Haven't seen it in a long time. Everybody, don't judge me. Haven't seen it since high school because that's when I was horny for this shit. Like the rest of us. Yeah, everybody, that's going to do it for this episode, our American Pie episode. And just in time, cops are on their way. hang on, everybody. Oh, it's a fire truck. Just kidding. We'll wait for that. Bye-bye. But yeah, everybody, we're going to keep talking. For our extended play, which is our post show, that's just for our Patreon folks. So I mentioned a bunch of stuff at the top of the episode. There's even more stuff coming for every episode. So head over to patreon.com/24flamespod to get in on all those. And if you got thoughts on American Pie, you want to tell us about it, email us at 24flamespod@gmail.com. You can find us on social media at 24flamespod and wherever you get your podcasts. Go and leave a rating, review, subscribe. It helps more people find the show. It helps us make the show better. And then you can come back next week. Next week is one of our co-hosts Chris's birthday. We're doing Phantom of the Paradise. And then we're going right back into food movies for like 6 weeks or something like that. It's like that was the one everyone started falling down on my feet when I was like, let's talk about food movies. And everyone's like, no, all the food movies. So we got a bunch of fun stuff coming up after that. Everybody, this episode of 24 Flames Per Second was produced and hosted by me, Robert Bohorkis. It's co-hosted by Kwesi Phillips. The head-to-head this week was Cody Olsen on the defense, Casey Rahm on the roasting side. And what else do I say? Our show music was composed and performed by Rob Joins and Will Paulson. Our network and co-op Party Fish Media is produced by Kwesi Phillips, Will Paulson, and me. And so, yeah, everybody, we're going to be back with the birthday episode next week. Should be fun. And yeah, come on back for that in 1 week's time. So yeah, everybody, thanks so much for listening. We will catch you then. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Party Fish Media acknowledges that it operates and records on Indigenous Duwamish and Puget Sound Coast Salish land that is still home to the Duwamish tribe. This land is stolen in violation of the Point Elliott Treaty of 1855. We are committed to uplifting the name of these lands and community members from these nations who reside alongside us. For more information on this land, its people, or ways you can help, visit duwamishtribe.org or realrentduwamish.org.